Welcome to Pop a la Carte, episode 59, which is really a special hour-long interview with the men of Versailles, conducted by our very own Valerie. So please check it out, and then remember to watch the final season of Versailles starting this weekend on Ovation.
Would you mind, for the recording, introducing yourselves so we can get your voices together?
I'm Evan Williams, and I play the Chevalier de Lorraine on Versailles.
I am Alexander Vlahos, and I play Philippe Duc d'Orléans.
I'm Ty Runyon, and I play Fabien Marshall.
Good. You have to talk
on
like
the show Versailles.
I know.
In my life.
Go ahead.
So not to start on like the depressing note, but because we were talking about it before we started recording, you've been off the set for a year now. You knew for 6 months, it sounds like, before anybody else was told that the show was over. So
not even.
No, 6 weeks before. Six weeks before
maybe.
We wrapped.
Okay.
We knew, and then it, only until April. It was like a week before we did Cannes TV series. Did France eventually announce that it was the last? We knew for ages.
Yeah,
I was tweeting about it for ages, saying goodbye, goodbye, yeah. Goodbye.
So it was out there because you were telling everyone, even though
people
didn't
want to
believe
officially. It. But I was,
yeah.
I was sort of, you know,
would have been a good marketing ploy had it not been true. Right, like goodbye, everybody. Just kidding.
Yeah.
Just kidding.
But also, you know, I was like I said to you before the interview started, was that, you know, they could have used it better in my terms of capitalizing on us being in that it was the last. Because telling people that it's the last means that people will be more invested in watching the last,
mm-hmm.
rather than it being like, well, it's going to come back next year as well, and well, we might catch it because there's always going to be on VOD or demand or whatever that's saying. So
mm-hmm.
I was always sort of saying, well, because we know, why not let them know, and then they can embrace it a bit better.
Well, especially...
Yes, go.
Especially since you are several seasons in.
Yeah.
It would be, because, you know, when you see... It's usually daunting. It's like, well, it's still going, but there's already 2 seasons. I'll wait until it's over. So, yeah, it feels like you could have used that, which Ovation is kind of using it now.
Yeah.
Because it
yeah.
was... Immediately when I got things, it was the final season. I'm like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then I cried.
Oh,
so did we.
So did we. But yeah, it's mad that it's been... We wrapped filming on October the 16th.
Yeah.
Last year. So it's, you know, it's mad that it's been
it's coming up
a year, you know, a year of doing loads of press and saying goodbye to it in different stages, different
time
countries.
Time flies when you're saying goodbye.
Yeah, I think last year when I did the interviews with the ladies, you guys were on set filming.
Yeah.
That's right. And I think
right.
Most of
yeah.
you couldn't come.
I think, well, not even though we couldn't come, but I think it was fantastic that Ovation brought over all the,
yeah.
all the women. It was great because also the show does get dominated by Louis and Philippe and the men in the show, but the show is not about, it's not male superiority, even though it's called Versailles, it's not called Louis XIV.
True.
And to showcase all the women last year was an amazing achievement and something that should have been done, because even though just not just amazing actors on the show, but we had Aude, our amazing producer.
Mm.
So it had a great, this show does have a strong female voice. The women in the show, the characters in the show are incredibly powerful. Awesome.
I wish we could have women directors. That would have been
yeah, that, that's one thing that the show, so we tried, I think season 2 they tried, but
there's
always that thing though, isn't there, about making sure that the people that are directing are the best for the job, whether they're female or male, but you know, but yeah, you're
and
right.
Who's available.
Yeah,
of course.
I think that's
yeah.
what happened in season 1 was that they went after, I don't know if I can say it, but Sarah Polley.
Yeah.
And she wasn't available, and so I mean, scheduling
yeah.
too, but yeah.
I think Jessica Jones season 2, that was one of the few things where they made a point of every single episode was directed by a woman. I mean, that is
this
obviously
is
a film
great.
That's female-ish.
I was
yeah,
just at
so
I was just
exciting.
At Rain Dance Film Festival, and they've got this thing called F-rated. I think it's a thing now, isn't it? Where it's if it's female written, female directed, female lead cast, then it gets an F rating. So I think that's an amazing step in the right direction for programming television and film. Otherwise. F-rated.
Yeah.
Then we don't have any of the ladies here today.
Unfortunately.
Unfortunately, sad times. They're all busy.
They had their turn. I'm joking.
Yeah,
imagine. After all that, they had their turn. But I was saying, it's great to have. It's great to have us three here. Yes.
Aww.
We're friends.
Getting into some of the meat of the show. I think one of the interesting things that for some reason I didn't realize until I was watching it, the first 2 episodes of the season, was your characters, it's the the longest lasting relationship so far. I mean, technically Louis is married, but obviously that relationship doesn't really mean anything.
He goes through relationships like toilet paper.
Yeah.
It is the truest form of love in the show, fundamentally, I think.
And it's cool because I think the audience got to discover that along the way, whereas we as the actors, we knew that from the beginning. Like that was sort of how it was introduced to us, and that was a decision that we made very early on, was that we were going to play for real. And so it's cool to see the fandom sort of catch up with us and then really start to cheer for us. And now they're like clamoring. So it's cool to have built something that people are moved by.
Absolutely. I posted a photo, didn't I, on Instagram about 2-3 days ago. And there's a photo of just me and Evan, season one, first block of filming in an amazing castle, just having a laugh, just the photo of just behind the scenes. We didn't know. We knew about the relationship of the show, and we knew that we were committed to making these people, these real life people, this real life relationship as true and as three-dimensional as possible. But we didn't know at that point, we didn't even know how big the show was going to be. It was just the show that we were doing in France.
We knew what we dreamed it would
be. Yeah, yeah. But
the
then
fact that it would become reality.
Yeah, and then the idea that, you know, the hashtag Mon Chevy sort of term, the shipping term for our relationship wasn't even a thing. And we just sort of committed to, and we only had episode one and two scripts, so we didn't even know where the journey was going to take us. So glad that we got to show all the strings of our bow in that relationship.
Yeah,
three
ups
seasons.
And downs. And what's cool about working on television is that they're writing the scripts as you're working on it, and so they're also taking feedback from how we're performing our roles, and so it becomes a thing that, how do I describe that?
Well, it's like a marriage, isn't it, between writing and performance, and then it's ever changing. It's like it's a movable feast.
Yeah,
it sort of ebbs and flows compared to how we're doing and stuff. And, you know, season two, I sort of vocally said that I think we sort of broke up about as many times as we got back together in season two.
Yeah.
And in season three, you know, it's about the relationship and you know, you've seen episode one and two, right?
Yes.
So you've seen that they break up.
Yes.
And that's a thread that continues, you know, they cannot not be apart. Their lives are too intertwined for it to be official breakup, but they do go on their separate journeys in season three,
which is realistic. I mean,
and it is.
Can't just if we just stayed together the whole time, it would be a painting. It wouldn't be a TV show. So we need to tell a story.
And also for us as actors, it would be quite boring. I find that we did everything in season one and two together,
everything.
And in season three it allowed us everything too much, and we did and we in season three. We both got to experience a different version of the show, filming-wise.
Mm.
I got to work with this lovely man next to me, which I never got the chance to in season one and two. I think we shared one scene together. We were friends. Me and Ty were
right.
Friends off camera, and we saw each other in those grand palaces.
We had a stare down.
We had a stare down.
A
yeah,
weird, like,
but that was it. It was and
oh, and the sniffy. Don't
the
forget
sniff,
the sniffy moment.
They never made it. Thank God.
They had some weird
thing that he smelled.
Subplot where I was suspicious of Philippe and
my smell and
scent and in season one and. It was just too much.
Remember
they
that
got
too complicated.
Like,
your sniff, so,
okay,
like,
we need you smelling again. Okay. And then you smell something. Okay, I smell something. Like
it was like, thank God that thread.
You're
going
to need subtitles to explain that subplot.
But we never shared a moment. Well, we shared moments, but we never shared a scene. So the idea that due to the cause of us breaking up, that thread that sent me off in one direction also sent Evan off to meet an amazing guest actress and you had the most amazing other storyline. So it sort of swings and roundabouts. For the fans, I can guess that might be quite sad that Mon Chevy is no longer together.
That's good. Like, let them feel the depth of the...
Let them feel the lack.
Yeah, let them feel the lack. And then we'll see if it comes back
together. We'll see if it comes back together. But yeah, but it opens up more doors rather than closes them, is my point.
As much as they want it, they also want the drama of...
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly.
Yeah.
They tuned in every week in the UK and France to see whether we'd get back together, so that's good drama in terms of that,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah,
there you go.
It was actually interesting, the end of your second season story arc, Evan.
Mm.
When Louis challenges him to basically grow up.
Mm-hmm.
I was pretty sure that I thought I knew where that was going to go, and I was like, "Oh, this is going to be bad."
Mm-hmm.
And then we see him, and he really has grown up.
He's got a job.
He's got a job. He's He's honestly helping to raise Philippe's son.
Yeah.
He has a great relationship with
Palpatine.
Yeah.
In the absence of Philippe, between episodes 2 and 3, we find Chevalier really flourishing out from under the shadow of Philippe. And since he doesn't have the opportunity just to be dependent on Philippe, as he always has, he's been forced to reinvent himself. And so then when Philippe comes back, there's a certain friction because both men have changed. Both men have grown, and so we see them trying to reconcile that.
Yeah, and they both worked out separately and independently of each other that they are better people independently than having to be a unit. And it's about whether that... what that is between the two of them. But yeah, I think Philippe walks in and sees that Chevalier no longer needs him. He's got a job, he's got a wage, he's got a room. He's been looking after his son. It's like, okay, well... that's happened, and Philippe has been to war, fought for France, and what he believes is fighting for, and bodies, and I can imagine he's seen so many horrible things. Mm. The first thing that Philippe sees when he walks in is, the Gallery de Glace is finally completed. We learned a fact on the very first day of our little tour of Assigned Season 1, where one sheet of mirror is worth 10,000 battleships. So when Philippe walks in terms of that's why I was playing, and that's the thing, is when he walks in and sees that the Gallery de Glace is completed, he knows how much that room cost. And he's been fighting for France, and Louis has been taking all that money that he's been winning from the war, and rather than building and helping the soldiers and the injured, he's finally completed his palace. So there's that sort of juxtaposition between the two of them.
Is it his, is it just that has him so removed? Because he's come back and he doesn't feel in a place. I mean, we saw him at the end of season 1, I believe,
Halfway through season when he comes back from war and has the same sort of thing, which is this. What's amazing about this show and the writing is that we never say that they're gay. We never use that term. We never say homosexual. So there's certain things that is implied and that is just a given. Another thing about I find with Philippe is that he has PTSD. They never actually ever say it. He's completely bipolar. They never actually say it because that term didn't exist back then. But not even that. He comes back from war and he's a changed man, as you would. You've seen so much horror on that field or whatever in those battles. You would come back different. They're not just going to get him skipping in and being back to his old self. So I think it's great that the show represented some sort of trauma.
Yeah, I did tell that story with the fireworks, your PTSD reaction to the fireworks.
In season one. But then the same in season 3, you know, he comes back and... he's now, you know, the organizer of parties, extravagance. He sees the Gallery de Glace, extravagance. I think Philippe doesn't feel like he's part of this world because he's been fighting on the battlefield where there is no extravagance. I think that's a big thing to represent. And it's not implicitly written down. It's about, well, that's what naturally would happen, I think. You were there on that day, weren't you, Roger, when we filmed that scene with us coming back together. And we always talked about it. We didn't over-rehearse any of those initial scenes with Philippe and Chevalier because it always needed to be felt in the room. Mm-hmm. Richard Clarke wanted to rehearse it, and we sort of, let's just do a couple and feel it, and it works on screen. You get the story in their silence, and it always has been with these two characters that the less they say, the more you feel in a bizarre way, right?
And it's interesting that you see these two characters who have seemingly found their niche, and yet the love doesn't go through the brain.
Yeah,
it wants what it wants, and you can't deny it. Like when it's true love, you can't deny it.
Yeah.
So it just sets them both off again.
Yeah. Yeah.
Thanks,
Dan.
Yeah.
Do you think it's that removal that he has because of his PTSD, because he's been so far away, that has him so fixated on this story?
I think he's looking for a job. I think he sees the Chevalier's importance. And I think he wants responsibility. Philippe's always wants responsibility. Never gets given it because it's that classic younger brother, just do as you're told sort of thing. So Louis gives him a job at court. Gets to be part of the council. Part of that council job spurs him onto doing this thing about the Americas and sending these prisoners off. Through that, he then becomes basically obsessed. It's an addiction. And that's what Philippe has in his personality is he's an addict for opulence and gambling and sex and parties. But instead of going down that route, which we saw in season 1 when he comes back of basically having sex with anything that moves and drinking himself into a pit of oblivion, he comes back and decides, I'm not going to do that again. I'm not going to have that pitfall again. And he uses his obsession to what ends up becoming this amazing storyline of the man in the Iron Mask. So yeah, it is his removal from court, and also Philippe sees things outside of everything. I think he's always been the character that the audience sort of find their way in through the show, because he's the one that questions what's happening in front of him, questions Louis's judgment, questions morals and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
How are you doing there?
Just as I was about to ask you.
Oh, your question's coming up and you decided to eat? More fool you, sir.
That's always the way.
I know.
I was like, well, I guess I have a break. I'll take a bite of my sandwich.
No.
Because obviously, as I said, I've only seen the first two episodes, mm-hmm. so I don't know where it goes.
Yeah.
But that seems the obvious place to bring Fabian into the story.
It would appear that.
So, obviously last season he was fired and then brought back. Is there some resentment from him towards Louis because he was cast aside in that way and allowed to?
You know, there's probably some resentment there, but the fact remains that he deeply feels that that's his sole mission, is to serve the king. So I think it's a case of, I mean, you guys were talking about true love, and with Fabian, it would be true duty.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think Fabian probably always knew Louis would eventually come back and go, hey, I really need you. So resentment, I mean, I think for him being the older person and just who he is, I think it's probably more understanding than resentment, and that, you know, that Louis needed to have his little spaz and then come back and, you know, ask him back. So I don't think there's too much resentment there. It's just, you know, happy to be back. Otherwise he's on the streets, you know.
Mm-hmm. And he's obviously got a big part to play in the story that's in unveiling with the troubles with the people of Paris, well, and France in general, with the rising taxation and the frustration there. Does he sympathize with the people? Because he is the only one in the story who actually came from that side of
mm-hmm,
everything.
Right. Well, it's also his moral code. I mean, believing that his job serving Louis, you know, as atrocious as it may seem through a modern lens, that a lot of times it's he operates by a strict moral code, or code, whether it's moral or not. But I think when he sees the injustice in the streets of Paris and with the people and Louis beginning to take, you know, a questionable turn and make some questionable choices, he starts to sympathize for sure, and maybe question his own loyalty.
Because we do have to assume this is the end, although I saw your tweet, and now you've just riled people up about that's one of those things, like, I'm on the fan side at times where you're
the hashtag, like, save the side series.
Yes.
Do you know what it's
everything
whether
you said is true.
Whether anything comes of that. Just proves that this show has transcended success, in my opinion. Success via TV shows means ratings. BBC, 1.8 million, it got its audience. I don't know what it is on Ovation and the Netflix audience after this. Canal Plus, it was the highest rated new original show that they'd ever created for 5 years. So
the number of countries and territories.
We sold,
like,
190 191 countries, and there's 196 countries in the world. So 5 countries hasn't bought it. So you, so what countries those are? Yeah, and we're going to knock some doors, crack some skulls. No, but
why didn't you buy it?
No, but I mean, that is bigger. That is bigger than Game of Thrones. That is bigger than, so you're talking. This is that's. But also, it's not about that. It's about the fandom, and that word I use lightly because fandom means sometimes has a lot of bad connotations. But the word fandom. This show has transcended success because of the art that's created, because of the we're doing Versailles cons, we're doing Versailles-based conventions. You know, it's that means that this Save Versailles series, even though they're small, they've already got 5,000 signatures. Whether that, those 5,000 signatures ever makes it to Canal Plus is beside the point. It's because these people feel vocally and strongly about this show.
For whatever reason, the show has made its way into the hearts of people. And we've all been on other projects before, but this is the first project that I have had feedback from in all sorts of languages.
Yeah.
From people saying that they've been touched and moved and has actually changed their lives, changed their outlook on things like same-sex relationships, has changed their outlook on modern society because of the ways that this show is sort of a mirror for the way things are with the celebrity culture and with the
branding,
with branding and all that.
Yeah.
So for whatever reason, it struck a nerve, and it's just been a really wicked ride for us. I can speak for you guys too.
No, absolutely, and also like you know, it just speak for myself. When I saw these boys yesterday, it's not like three actors meeting up and we've got some work to do this week. These are true friends. I mean, they're just because they're on the other side of the world and means nothing. So the week we created a family as a cast,
mm-hmm.
and that then shows on screen. The audience can see that camaraderie
mm-hmm.
and love that we share, and then it goes to them as well, and they've got this family that they've created, which they you know that this the Versailles family they tweet each other good morning every morning.
Yeah,
every day for the last 3 years they've been doing that.
And
that's amazing. You know, every morning they'll say good morning, they'll send each other a Versailles pic or a Versailles gift.
Yeah.
And you see that across your timeline. And that blows my mind.
And, you know, I have to, you know, tip my hat to Simon Mirren and David Wollstonecraft, our creators, for really planting that seed.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
In terms of the importance of our relationships within the cast off screen. They really came in and insisted that we spend time together and that our, you know, solidify those dynamics and those relationships because they knew through experience that that would resonate on camera and that the viewers would respond to what
yeah.
the relationships that we were actually building because it's an energetic thing, you know, and you can't fake it.
You
it
cast,
took a risk.
Yeah, you cast young people as your leads. And you cast in the core group of us were in within the first month of living in France, went out, and we painted the town red. But that idea that we if initially got on so well and still do.
I don't know what you're talking.
Yeah, I have no memory of that.
I was doing my homework.
Yeah, I was studying my lines up.
It was just me on my own then. I painted the town red. With just loads of pictures of the guys, just so I put them out on tables. No, don't lie to me, boss. Don't lie to this interview. Show some respect. No, but like, because what Ty said is that we created our own world
mm-hmm.
off camera
mm-hmm.
that then was easy to pick up on camera, and
mm-hmm.
the audiences aren't stupid. You know, they can see that.
One of the really cool things about this show is that it's got a very specific aesthetic. Which we you know we're not responsible for it. It's the aesthetic of the period, but it's got such glamour to it that I think it really captures people's imaginations and it makes them want to be part of it. And so I think that's why the Versailles fans have really gotten into it. There's lots of cosplay stuff. There's lots of role playing kind of stuff that they get into. And they've also been involved in a lot of the other initiatives that we've been part of. I've been doing lots of fundraising for charities.
And I wrote a Kickstarter for to make a short film, and I guaranteed 90% of the money that was contributed to that was from the Psy family.
Yeah,
which is amazing. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Sorry, we went a little bit off piece there.
No, that's fantastic. What I was going to say was, assuming it is. The end.
Yeah.
Because we're going to assume it is the end.
Yeah.
Are you happy with where your characters, where your stories end?
Do you want to start? You should start.
Probably not.
Do you want to start? No, you should. I think you should.
No.
No?
You go. You.
We'll go. Okay.
I don't think you should end.
I know, that's what I'm saying. I think you should start so at least it ends on a...
Oh, no.
No. all right, let's start. I
can give him a minute to figure
yeah.
out.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah,
yeah.
Yeah.
No, that's quite good. Personally and artistically, yes. I left Philippe in Paris thinking I've done everything that I can with him. Story-wise, I was very grateful to be given the Man in the Iron Mask thread as a sort of like one with this. I felt like it was one of the strongest arcs in that I've been a part of in on all three seasons. I felt like I've literally given, sort of, to excuse my French, but like I've shit everywhere on in terms of how much I can give with Philippe. And no, there's a saying, you know, like, you know, like just literally give everything. So that's what I mean. I've done everything in that sense. Why does that make? Why does that make you laugh?
I just pictured that being the headline. Alex Blahos shits everywhere.
Don't do that, please.
I promise.
Good. Roger, keep an eye on this one. Okay, no. But like the idea that I just sort of, you know, and I fought for with the writers. We all did. We always fought against the writers. The writers were always great and they're on our side, but we knew the show better than they did at certain points, you know, the characters especially. And I fought for certain moments in the last couple of episodes to make sure that the journey was fully complete. We spent, this is kind of spoilery, but we spent a good chunk of like a week rewriting our last scene together, me and Evan.
Not to say what happens in that last scene.
No, we're not going to say it. But the idea that we me and Evan made sure that our last scene together as characters was how we wanted to end the show,
yeah.
And we fought for that, and we got it. And it's one of the best scenes that we've done together.
Yeah.
And there's a reason for that, because we knew our characters, and we wanted to make sure that as it was the last, by that point that we knew, to make sure that our send off was what we thought these characters deserved. So yeah, I'm very happy with how it's left, and there's no sort of ooh what ifs, but that's just me.
From my character playing the Chevalier was the longest I've ever played a character before, and I totally fell in love with playing the character. It's the most fun I've ever had, and so I would do it again in a heartbeat. I don't feel like there's any limit to the stories that could be told through this guy, because he's such a mutable character. He changes so much over the course of three seasons, and so just to see the character continue to evolve, I'd be thrilled to continue to do it. However, I don't feel sad that it's I do feel a little sad, but I don't feel pained that it's finished, because like I said, it was a very full arc, and I'm also looking forward to the next thing. I mean, as artists, we have to continue. We're like sharks. If we don't keep swimming, we'll die. So I'm looking forward to swimming on to the next thing, and I'm already doing it. I'm already exploring the next sort of creative things. Actually, can I plug my next creative thing?
Please do. Your music.
I've been writing music my whole life, and I finally got my act together and released my first single today.
Oh, that's fantastic.
The name of the music project is Bright World, and the name of the single is Tough Drug, and it's about codependence and how love gets lost when we get addicted to each other. So it just came straight from my heart. So it's available on iTunes and Apple Music and everything.
Yes.
I hope you like it. And
if there's a mic, you'd drop it right now.
So I loved Chevalier, and it helped me learn about myself. And I'm gonna take what I learned into my next project.
Do you wanna dampen the mood?
No.
Joking.
No, I think like not to avoid the question. I loved playing Fabien Marshall. I think it is probably the greatest role in my career in many ways, just in terms of the layers and depth and research and that I was able to do, and backstory writing, and because there was so much that was unknown about him, so I really got to dive into backstory and kind of create someone out of nothing as a fictitious character, and really loved that. I think season three, I feel like the storyline with Sophie gets resolved quite nicely, and
Man of the Mask one sort of does as well. It was the Paris one that sort of.
Well, I felt like the question of loyalty and what that is, the nature of that, and duty, it felt like an afterthought to some extent, and maybe not as fleshed out as I would have liked, you know, to explore, but because it was such a main storyline and theme in the first two seasons, it sort of was left, you know, kind of with some holes, and you know, that's it is what it is. It's a huge cast, and they loved to bring on new characters and kind of create these arcs, like with Leopold, and you know, and so there's only so much time, and I get that, but yeah, I do feel like the Sophie storyline was quite satisfying.
Well, that started with the mum, didn't it? That started with
that connected to the very beginning of season one. Yeah.
That's really satisfying about doing a show for three seasons, is you can take things from the very beginning and draw them all the way.
Absolutely.
The
like there's
the
this
fans
scene
that are really paying attention are the ones who are really gratified by that.
There's a scene, our first scene on camera together, apart from the in season one of the sort of fellatio, is that, you know, there's a scene, there's the scene with, you know, Chevalier's feeding me grapes, saying, you know, you have the power to be king, you're better than your brother. That scene and the subtext in that scene, not necessarily what we were saying, but the idea about control and who's more dominant. The last scene that you ever see them together, it's completely resolved in terms of that imbalance that was started off, right? And that's something that, like you said, the fans are, they're very quick to see the mirroring of that. Same with the mirroring of Fabian with Sophie and Fabian.
Well,
it's
satisfying.
Yes,
you
it is, because you go.
It's basic narrative. It's
yes.
Basic drama.
Yeah.
You know, and yeah, that's what, you know, people respond to is the mythology. You know, and that journey. So.
It's always been crazy to me how closely the fans of the show have been watching it.
Yeah.
Like that. Like they'll notice the tiniest little thing, which as an actor is cool because we're putting in tiny things all the time. But to have people watching closely enough that they actually
spot
are picking that up is that's so gratifying as an actor. It's so cool.
Yeah.
You talked about helping to rewrite your last scene.
Yeah.
How far in advance was it known that it would be the end?
Well, that was the main thing about 8, 9, and 10. Were 8, 9, and 10 arrived quite late in the game, and 8, 9, and 10 were. Mm. The end was, we were known, it was known that it was going to be the last. The writers didn't, or the Canal Plus, or whoever was in charge, would have preferred it to be a little bit more open-ended. And I think I fought especially for giving closure. Because how many shows have I seen where they haven't, and we know you're not coming back, so why do it like that?
Mm-hmm.
Better to have a start, a middle,
yeah.
and an end. And if we then get picked up for a season four by surprise in 5 years' time, or 4 years' time, or a year time, then you just pick it up, and it's not a disrespect.
Yeah, nobody's
going to
be like, well, you can't.
Yeah, because you close the book. Mm. I just think that I was saying to them, I was like, give them the people that have been committed to making to watching 30 hours of drama, give them some closure. Because how many times have I watched a show where that closure's never been given, and you actually got you left with a bitter taste in your mouth?
Mm-hmm.
So that's why we did that, because the scene that was given to us was sort of like a bit like this. I'm sort of doing a gesture for, you know, a bit, you know, yeah, there's a bit, well, you know, we'll see what happened. And they kind of enjoyed that. And I was like, no, we'll give them an ending. Because I think they deserve that. And thank God we did. And a lot of storylines got given endings due to rewrites and stuff like that. Our own rewrites or them coming to some sort of eureka moment.
Collaborative.
It was collaborative. We were changing stuff a lot throughout all three seasons, really. Leicester season one was David and Simon, because David
mm-hmm.
and Simon were very present on set, so it wasn't us coming up with ideas, but they were seeing the scene in blocking action and working out and going, well, that doesn't quite work, so we'll change it. It was very movable, wasn't it?
It was movable.
And then season two and season three, it was more our responsibility to make sure that there was a logic.
As much as possible.
Yeah. Brought,
I mean, I fought
know.
Like hell.
Yeah, you did. You did quite right. No, you did. But then it wasn't. They weren't going, we're not going to accept you fighting. They were listening, and because they knew we were fighting for the strength of the show, it wasn't for egotistical reasons. It's like, I want more scenes. It was like, you need to make sure that this is logical, right?
Yeah,
fundamentally,
that,
right?
Yeah, that was yeah.
Yeah.
A lot of things had to go right in order to get this show made at all, and there were periods along the course. All the way along the course when things were this close to disaster. And so not just with this telling of the story, but also with the sets and the funding and everything. Like it was a tight wire act to get this show out. So the fact that it has made it out all across the world is a triumph. And you can't expect all the things to go right. And so it was a long shot that the show would end up the way that it has. And we got especially lucky with the cast because there was no egos. We didn't have any bad apples. Everybody was there for, we were all team players. We were all there for each other. Mm-hmm. And I think people say that a lot, but it's cool to actually say it and mean it.
Yeah.
Because this was, is the first real big production out of France.
Internationally.
Yeah.
Internationally, yeah. Their first major step into English language, basically, which meant internationally, you know, branding and the whole thing. So, yeah.
Which, when I first heard the show, I thought it was amusing because the French are so picky about their language and it seems strange.
God, I mean, me and George specifically, when they announced the casting, we got a lot of, not abuse, but a lot of uproar. People came to the first preview, press preview, that we did. They did interviews with us before they'd seen an ep. We got frost from Liza Laurent, the French newspaper. He's a French newspaper that's quite right wing that came to see it and so that interviewed me and George and were just completely hostile. Watched the episode, came back to do another interview about 3 months later, and they said, "We ate our hat. We think you're brilliant." Took a long time for people to come around to a brave, not to say brave for us in English and in the US and stuff like that, but a brave step for France.
For the French producers, yeah. And it's funny because the French public really came around when the British tabloids picked it up and started saying that it was trash.
Suddenly they were like standing there on the battle gate to like, no, you don't diss our show.
Yeah,
so
that's right.
It came full circle and...
And now the British tabloids are eating their hats too.
Because they also love it, and they are kicking themselves, and all the bad newspapers that are quite derogative of the nudity in the show and calling it porn and cravats. But that was season one. Season three, absolutely adore it. So it took them a lot. It took them a while, but now it's a show that's really well loved. Sod's law that it's no longer coming back. You know,
isn't that usually the way it happens.
It usually is. Yeah, absolutely.
It's exciting to be a part of a project that. Set a course of action for future co-productions in other countries in Europe and kind of created the mold and pioneered that. So now you're seeing, you know, Italy, Spain, other countries doing English language projects to be sold to the world and are actually citing Versailles as the example they're following. So
proof of concept.
That's pretty exciting.
It's very exciting, yeah.
Art is one of the ways that you can come together.
Absolutely.
Because it transcends borders.
Yeah.
So it does feel like, you know, we're slowly getting more even British stuff
right.
here.
Absolutely.
Right.
Even Canadian
for sure.
productions that are, you know, Orphan Black.
Mm-hmm.
Yes,
great,
of course.
Here.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
Yeah.
And the human element of the stories is universal. So it's cool to have different cultures cooperating to get the stories told because it resonates everywhere.
Which is what I was saying before the interview, and we were talking about it last night, it's like you can tell when the show airs in a certain country because we get an influx of, I've got 1,000 followers from Brazil, the show must be out in Brazil today, you know, or vice versa, or Romania. Like, it's amazing that even though it might be dubbed or subtitled, the actual... it actually is a show that, like you said, like Evan said, like the language is universal and the nature and the story beats are completely universal.
It is the weirdest feeling to see yourself on screen, open your mouth, and a different person's voice comes out in a language you don't understand. So strange.
I just wanted to end because you did talk about being like a family on set. So just some fun questions because obviously fans always like this.
Yes.
Thing. Who would you call if your cat was struck up a tree?
My call if my cat was stuck up a tree.
Who
if
wants
my
that?
Cat?
Not among yourselves, the entire cast.
Are we talking cast or characters?
Either way.
Ooh.
I'll let you choose.
Because characters, it would be Fabian because he would just. But he'd probably shoot it out and then bring a dead one to you. Like, you asked me to bring the cat. You didn't say
your
alive
cat,
or dead.
Sire.
Your cat, sire. Like, in a box.
Yeah, fair enough.
Right? That's what Fabian would do. He'd just shoot it and go dead. Stop.
Yeah, or he'd already be in the tree.
Yeah, sure. He'd be like,
my cat's up there. What are you doing up there?
He's just there, like, in, like, pout like this.
Yeah,
like,
just, like, staring at
you. You need this?
In terms of the people, I would pick Pip Torrens, who played Cassell, because he's tall. And he would just be able to just grab his hand.
He is really tall.
He is really tall.
And he talks.
Your cat.
Your cat.
Evan?
If my cat was stuck up in a tree...
I love this question. It's great.
You know what? I would call George.
Because you'd sing him now?
No, just because, like, I feel like he would care.
He wouldn't necessarily get down, but he would.
Yeah, he would care.
He'd care.
He'd be like, oh yeah, man, that's a
Ty.
Character wise, yeah, I'd probably ask myself.
Yeah,
to take care of it.
Yeah, sure.
Or get my men.
Yeah, yeah, your musketeers.
Oi, get the cat.
Yeah, yeah. Oi.
And but in terms of the cast, man, and I do have a cat who would travel with me to Paris, named Sterling.
Yeah.
So you know, this really hits home.
Sterl.
So if Sterl.
Still, is up a tree.
Up a tree.
Who would you
call
out of the cast?
Who would I call out of the cast? I mean, does it have to be one person? Yeah.
If there's a team that works well together, that works too.
Yeah, I'd probably call these two. You know,
we would do like,
and you know, they but yet. They might be like, sorry, Ty, we're busy.
This is true.
So if they were busy, then I would call George.
George, yeah, George is reliable.
Yeah,
yeah, good shout. We probably would be busy.
You might be busy.
But like, dude, really?
I'm at a photo shoot right now.
Yeah, I'm at a photo shoot.
Never mind, I'll call George.
We'll call George for you.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, or actually, like, that's actually a paper mache cat. We actually have Stir with us on the boat.
On the boat. We're down the sand. He's with us. He's good. Great. Next question.
Because you did talk about bloopers.
Yeah.
Who broke character most?
Wow. So,
bloopers? Good question. Broke character.
You might have different answers for this. You guys didn't necessarily film as much together.
Right.
I think I broke character quite a lot because I needed to get out of the thing I had to get out of. But not necessarily in bloopers, but just sort of making sure that when action started, I was in it. But then the minute it cut, I was not really in.
You mean anyone in all three seasons? Actor, any character?
Anatole Toman, who played Moncourt.
Yeah.
Because right, he was never. I don't think he was ever in character to break
right,
it.
Right, it was kind of.
He was a mesh, but he was. But this, our impression of Anatole is like I would walk past his dressing room, and the door would be open, and we were told never to lie down because our wigs cost a lot of money. But he would literally, this wig would be over his face. He'd be with shirt off, in his pants, sort of like lying on the bed, and he'd be like, "My babies, my princes. Hey, my prince, where do I am?" Where do I get the stutzi? Now my stutzi is like, you know, the money. I'm like, you mean per diem? He's like, yeah, the stutzi.
The stutzi.
I'm like, the finance department is like, where's the finance department, baby? And my third voice is like, okay, will you come with me? Like, he was one of those ones that were just constantly asked. He'd need a lot of notes. He wanted notes all the time. Was I good? Was I good princess? Was I good baby?
Yeah.
And so, yeah, Anatole was always the one that was never really in character to be out of it.
He was amazing.
But he was incredible. What a voice.
What a voice.
What a madman.
Yeah, it's funny because very rarely did we have actual comedic scenes. So usually when you break character, it's because you're laughing or something. Otherwise,
yeah.
You're like, you just forget your line. Or most often what happened is since we're speaking... kind of archaic language sometimes. It would just be like, you just trip over your tongue.
Mm-hmm.
And so, but usually we were working at such a clip that it wouldn't be so much a break. You would just be sort of like, and then be like, going again.
Yeah,
would just go again. So, but when things went wrong, they usually went pretty fantastically
pretty
wrong. My friend Ty Runyon here, he entered a room so
forcefully. Season 3.
That's on the blooper reel that they eventually released, which is, yeah.
Yeah,
I did exactly the same thing in season 1 where
one.
I nearly killed an extra.
Right.
The bashed through the door. The door came swinging off its hinges, so it went off. And then it was just standing there, and I turned around, and these extras that are guards, they're just like, we do not move it. They just cut, we are not breaking a sweat. And I look around, and I'm like, he's going to die. This is about week 2 into filming. I was like, I'm going to kill someone on my, like, this is great. And the door was slowly, and everyone jumped in to stop it. And but then you did the same, but not.
I did the same in season 3. I destroyed a chandelier.
Like those candelabras.
Yeah, it was kind of like, you know, teetering on this pillar, and you know, I guess I thought there was a sandbag there. I don't know.
The pillars were false.
The door flew open.
the chandelier. I could hear the chandelier.
Your face
like,
is putting, because he's running towards camera, and you're like,
I can hear this like, I'm like, what? Turn around to see this thing smash. The one real thing in the whole room.
And you hear him yell, he's like, no!
Glass, like, everywhere, yeah.
Good. Actually, kind of, like, George is actually, he's a bit of, pulls lots of funny faces.
He's a clown.
He's a bit of a clown, trying to keep himself a bit, because he's, you know, bless him, he's probably doing most of the scenes most of the days.
Yeah.
So he's trying to keep himself a little bit, I think, awake for the whole thing. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's a bit of a slog, but yeah.
Yeah. My favorite was when we were shooting scenes. There's a scene in season two where we have a an orgy.
Yes.
I don't know if you remember that, but so Al and I spent most of that day naked
with a bunch of loads
of, except for like a little modesty pouch. And what was fun for me was just like waltzing around naked. It was the first time, really. Like, I didn't realize I was such an exhibition. But like, there was all these extras, and I could tell like they were a little bit uncomfortable. So I would just walk up to them and be like, "Hey, how you doing?"
We'd have that on season two. Mike Barker, the director of that episode, for some reason wanted a sort of revolving table. There was no real logical reason given to that. There's a table that moved, so we had this amazing idea that we were both in an embrace and talking to these big scenes while the table moved around. But like, towards the end of that, we were completely naked standing on this table. So even if we were thought no one could see, but certain parts of us, very slowly it would be slowly revealed.
It was like a rotisserie chicken.
Yeah, that was exciting. I mean, in seasons one and two, my storyline seemed to end up or pass through a whorehouse at some point.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's France.
So they go all out,
the rules are a little different. And yeah, you would just be walking through, even in rehearsal.
Those
are the body parts. There they are. And you know, they would have people, you know, a man and a woman together, fully naked in the act
of sex.
And just kind of bearing all, like even in rehearsal.
There's the idea of this thing that we magically all know is called a closed set. It doesn't exist.
It doesn't exist in France.
Closed set, like, you know, limited crew. No, everyone's there.
Close. If they advertise a closed set, it's going to make more people come.
The day of just sex all day. Okay, well, that's when the Canal Plus turn up suddenly, or the execs turn up, like, watching by Video Village. Like, hang on a minute.
I'm interested in the narrative.
Yes. Next question. Before we keep talking about me.
Was there a prankster on set?
Was there a prankster?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I hotbox your room when I used to vape.
Yeah, you did. You bastard.
I used to play tricks. I used to go into people's like rooms when they were on set, and I would like film myself being in those rooms, and I'd film Evan's room, and I used to vape plumes of smoke. So I was thinking, so I knew Evan was finishing his one of his last scenes of the day. So I went in about pretty much half an hour before, closed the windows. And I just spent half an hour vaping in his room, so there was just, and I closed the door, and then I just waited for him to go in, and I could just hear like, and just stumbling out of this sort of plume of smoke.
Yeah. It's like, that's what it's like to exist inside Alex's lungs.
Health.
I have a disappointing story about a prank.
Oh, right.
I don't know if I told you guys.
No, did you?
What?
Did you try one and fail?
Well, so in season two, at the end, you know, of season two, the last scene we were shooting, if you remember, was the Indian kind of dance.
Yes,
oh,
yes.
The huge dance.
Oh, you turned
right?
up. Cause you, it was your, it wasn't, you weren't filming, right?
I wasn't in that scene.
And it was our last of the day.
The last of the day. And so I had arranged with wardrobe to be fitted with a gown. And so.
No.
You didn't hear about this?
No.
Oh my God, it was this epic prank.
You drove all the way. It was Vicomte, right?
Yeah,
so like
we had the gown. So Fabien was to appear in drag during the dance.
What?
And go in, and I was going to go hit on George.
Yeah.
And it was this huge prank. But, and Buck.
Louis Chiquette, right? It was Louis Chiquette.
Buck,
second
the
second AD.
First AD.
Sorry about that.
Knew about it. Some people knew about it. Most people didn't. I show up to, you know, get ready and do this, and I go down to set, and Buck is throwing a fit. I don't know if you guys remember how behind it was, and it was this like massive scene, and the first AD just threw a fit and kicked everyone out and like specified me, like, get out of here. It's like, it's not happening. He looked at me and was like, it's not happening.
To make the day. Wow. Were you fully done?
I was fully done.
I never saw.
Man, that was an opportunity for some pictures.
I do. Yeah, there are some photos somewhere.
Let's see some
from
photos. You should send Valerie.
Not from the night, but from wardrobe. When
get,
I was doing the fitting.
Yeah, we should.
Yeah,
we
I have
should,
some photos
because
that
fabulous
yeah.
drag
yeah.
is what we all need to see in 2018.
Yeah, I had a one prank that I did on Jessica, who played Palatine. There was one scene where I was shooting other scenes during the day, so I happened to be there, but she hadn't seen me, and she had a scene where she had to go searching through a big, the big room. What's it? The
Grand
the,
Salon.
Yeah, the Grand Salon, and was asking everybody, "Have you seen Chevalier? Have you seen Chevalier? Has he seen Chevalier?" So what I did is, the last take, I went and hid inside the room in a place where she couldn't see me, but I knew where she was gonna end up, and so that way she had to say, "Have you seen Chevalier? Has she seen Chevalier?" And we were filming it. And then when she got to the last person, "Have you seen Chevalier?" She turned around and I was right there. And I was like, "Yes, can I help you?" And she screamed. So that was nice.
Yeah.
It's a friendly prank.
Yes.
I didn't do anything like vaping.
Sorry,
vape.
You've never been back for that?
No, sorry.
No, only yeah. Not
Sri
yet.
Lanka.
Not yet.
Well done. There's a week. Yes.
Oh,
oh yeah. Okay, I know straight away.
I know right away.
Well, you go first, go on.
Love Will Tear Us Apart.
Oh, Joy Division. Nice. Joy Division, that is a horrible song to sing in karaoke. It's fucking miserable. mine would be...
I'm like, not with you.
Mine would be, I Wish I Could Be King by the Lion Kings. Yeah, I wish
Nice, yeah.
I think so, yeah, that
nice.
Would be quite fun.
Mine would be Bohemian Rhapsody by Queen.
Oh, yes!
Bismillah.
Nailed
it. I mean, you're doing all the voices.
Yeah.
Right. That was the quickest replies to all of those. Well done.
Yeah, that was really quick.
Yeah.
You got that right off the bat.
Well,
like
I didn't even think about it as well. Super.
All right. Well, then just if you want to give us a tease of what you guys are working on next, obviously you did a little bit, but do you have anything on screen that you can tell us about?
I'm editing a short film that I wrote and directed and shot while I was shooting in Paris, and it stars Lizzie Brochet, who played Claudine, and so we're looking forward to that.
I'm about to play Captain Hook, Peter Pan in Over London, the play version, hence why I'm growing this god awful beard. Your beards look great. Your beard is great.
Yes.
Your beard's fine. And I just directed my first short called Lola that will be hopefully entering into.
And
Anna Brewster, who played Monsters of Pan, is the lead. So yeah, I brought back some of the Versailles peeps to help me out.
We stayed together like a family.
And I'm just going to copy both of you, because I'm about to release a short film that I made between seasons 1 and 2, sci-fi, that you know is finally complete. And
great.
I'm going to put that out. And my band, Corridor, we're just mixing our record now, which is called A Separate Reality. And yeah, so I'm excited.
Music
about
and shorts, baby. Music
yeah.
and shorts.
Awesome. All right. Well, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
For more news, reviews, and interviews, check out withanaccent.com and follow us at withanaccent on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, and Tumblr, as well as at Pop a la Carte Pod on Twitter and Facebook.